and welcome to a mini-sode of My Streaming Bubble, the podcast where I talk about the shows I love with the people I tolerate. I'm your TV watching and talking host, Jen, and in today's mini-bubble, I'm just going to hit up a few of the things that I've recently watched. So maybe you've watched these and you want my general thoughts. Maybe you haven't seen these and would like to maybe check them out after listening to this episode, although there will be spoilers, so please be sure to check the episode description for which ones will be spoiled if you don't want the spoilers. But yeah, I've just been, during our March kind of birthday madness and taken this month off in terms of scheduled recordings, I've had a chance to kind of watch what I want to watch. And aside from rewatches, these are some of the things that either I've watched or my husband and I have watched together, and I just, they're worth noting. They're worth talking about at least briefly. So with that said, I'm going to go over these handful of movies and shows, and I'll give the IMDb synopsis and then my synopsis. So I will try and start with the non-spoilery ones first. And then move into the ones where I have to share all the things. So, all right, first up, Jury Duty on Prime. Per IMDb, it follows the workings of an American jury trial through the eyes of Ronald Gladden, a juror who is unaware the entire case is fake. Everyone except him is an actor, and everything that happens is carefully planned. I kind of remember when this first became available on streaming and people were tweeting about it, and I kind of stayed away from it because I was like, what, James Marsden? Wacky reality show, okay. And didn't know a whole hell of a lot about it. Just like, you'd look at an image from the series and you're like, oh, okay, it's a Jury Duty thing. So I wasn't aware that it was, everything was all planned and everyone was an actor, and except for the one guy, Ronald. And I loved it. This show was hilarious. And I kind of remember there was this other show years ago on like Spike TV, I think it was. It was like the Man's Channel and shit. And it was the same thing. It was like a reality show. And everything was set up, and everyone was actors except for the one guy. It was like the Joe Schmo show. And I always thought the premise was hilarious and a lot of fun. So we were watching this series, and it's amazing, the details and everything. Because in the last episode, they do go over kind of the production stuff. After they break the news to Ronald as that everything was fake, they take him around to show him what was orchestrated, where all the cameras were and everything. And so it was really kind of cool to see like how much work and effort went into everything to keep it going. And the fact that this dude at no point, well, not at no point, because there were a few times he was like, this shit feels like a reality show, because there were some like wackadoodle things happening. And, but he went along with it. And it was bananas. And these characters that these actors were playing, part of the jury, like, just some of the most really interesting folks, and it was hysterical. And the thing that I liked about it, well, one of the things that I liked about it was that when they revealed to Ronald that everything was faked, instead of just being kind of like, haha, we got you, nothing was real, they immediately kind of followed up with the just talking about what a great guy he is and how he took the blame for like a giant shit, and he didn't, and how he was supportive of like the weird dude and his chair pants. And, and they were just like, you know, so the verdict in your trial, in this trial of yours, Ronald, is that you are a hero. And I was like, oh my God, that is the sweetest fucking thing. Because the dude was a really nice, super sweet guy. I still just can't believe he went through all of it. But then when it came down to like them trying to deliberate the fake trial and everything, he was all about it. He was like, he was in it to win it, not realizing there's like nothing to win. And then they awarded him a big, large sum of money, which was pretty cool. But it was, the show was hysterical. It's, there were some points where you just can't even believe these things are happening. And like, they go out on like a field trip kind of thing to check out where the accident for the trial had happened or whatever. And it's like, that doesn't happen. Oh, bless his heart. So that was probably really spoilery, but given what the premise of the show is, you kind of just know going in, like it's all fake, and at some point it's going to be revealed. So, but I can't even imagine, because it was like 3 weeks, and I can't imagine basically staying in character for 3 weeks straight. That is impressive. That is very impressive. And it's such a good show. It's a lot of fun to watch. So highly, highly recommend it. All right. A movie that I watched. I watched a lot of movies and not a lot of TV shows. But the first one that I watched, well, not necessarily the first one I watched, but the first one I'm going to bring up is Army of the Dead. So, per IMDb, following a zombie outbreak in Las Vegas, a group of mercenaries take the ultimate gamble, venturing into the quarantine zone to pull off the greatest heist ever attempted. What I says about this movie, I says, it's a bright and shiny zombie movie with Dave Bautista and that actress that plays Jackie from Yellow Jackets. So, I won't get too spoilery with this one, but it was kind of fun to watch in the sense that like I liked the action-y bits and the killing and the and the gore and everything, and it is just kind of bright and flashy and fun. And oh, and Tig Notaro is probably the best, just absolute, like I couldn't remember exactly the situation that was that got Tig into the movie, and then I Googled it and I was like, oh yeah, that's right, there was a piece of shit and then they replaced him. And best decision ever. Loved her. Love seeing Dave Bautista in, you know, just like, it's still an action role, but you know, it's not Drax, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy, Marvel. And I've really kind of enjoyed the couple of things that I've seen him in outside of the Marvel movies. And I'm thoroughly impressed, more and more so. Like, this movie, I don't love it. It was okay. Like I said, I just kind of liked, I'm in it for the shallow parts, you know, just the killing and the violence. Like, I didn't care about any of the relationships or any of that. I thought this group of zombies that they were facing off again, that was kind of interesting, but I also didn't really care. So I was just kind of in it for the bright and shiny, but Dave Bautista still did a really great job, I thought, with the character and trying to convey more heart, I guess. I don't know. It was fun. Another super fun movie, and I won't get super spoilery with it, was Hubby and I watched John Wick Chapter 3 Parabellum. And what IMDb says about this movie, John Wick is on the run after killing a member of the International Assassins Guild. And with a $14 million price tag on his head, he is the target of hitmen and women everywhere. What I says about this movie, I says, I fucking love these movies. I love these John Wick movies. They are so much fun. And I love the action sequences, the fight scenes, the just the constant shooting people in the head. This one had a lot of nut shots, I noticed. I don't remember that many being in the first two, but whatever. It was a hoot. So I'm just like laughing and giggling and just kind of wee, just excited to see, to watch the movie. And it was, I mean, I love them. They're so much fun. Absolutely ridiculous. But sometimes that's all I want in a movie is just absolute ridiculousness and to be entertaining as fuck. And that's exactly what these are. Let's see. Oh, and this one had Halle Berry and Bronn of Blackwater, Game of Thrones. And one thing I did notice in chapter three that I don't recall in the first two, other than like a ton of nutshots, is that during a lot of the fight sequences in the third one, there was like no score, no music playing for like most of it. And a lot of them did have, you know, cool, upbeat, thrilling, action-y music to go with the scene. But there were quite a few that didn't, or the music came in kind of more towards the end of the fight, which I thought was kind of cool. I felt like that put us more in the fight with the moves and the sounds and the sound effects and everything. So very cool, I thought. All right. So this next movie, I'm probably going to get really spoilery about it because it makes me so mad. So up next is Boondock Saints 2, All Saints Day. What IMDb says about this movie is, the McManus brothers are living a quiet life in Ireland with their father. But when they learn that their beloved priest has been killed by mob forces, they go back to Boston to bring justice to those responsible and avenge the priest. What I says about this movie, I says, this movie is so fucking stupid. Completely, completely unnecessary. So the reason why I ended up watching this movie, I rewatched Boondock Saints because I'd been meaning to for a while. And then on Threads, there was a thread about, you know, name a famous trio. I posted the Three Amigos and then someone commented with the McManus brothers and Rocco. And I was just like, oh, yeah, like that was a good choice. And then it made me be like, OK, I need to rewatch this movie again. So I rewatched the first one. Still love it to pieces. I have it on DVD with like the deleted scenes and everything. I didn't watch it on DVD. I just pulled it up on streaming because I'm lazy. But still a great movie. Still holds up in a lot of respects. There are some lines and moments where it's just like, you know, not anymore. But it wasn't terrible. It wasn't like overused or overdone or anything like that. And it's just such a great story and premise, the first one, and absolutely love it. And I love it at the end where it's like the news reports kind of doing the interviews and the people being divided on whether or not, you know, the Saints are a good thing or a bad thing. So loved it. And I was like, all right. I kind of debated on whether or not I was going to rewatch the second one because I remember when the second one came out and I watched it and I hated it then. And I was like, well, maybe I won't hate it as much. Actually, I think I hate it more. Because it's still like just as bad. It did not age any better. So yeah, the boys are back in town. And they're going around and they're doing their killing and their avenging and they're saying their little pre-shoot-you-in-the-head prayer and everything. they recruit a new Rocco who is very much like the comedic relief, but it's kind of just painful. I like the actor, but I did not care for this character. Like, this is nothing against any of the actors. This movie just, I think, should not have been made. The weird thing is that this movie feels like it was made by someone who was like a fan of the first movie and not done by the writer and director of the first movie. But that's not the case, unfortunately. Both were written and directed by Troy Duffy, with Boondock Saints 2 also having Taylor Duffy as credited as a writer. So yeah, it's really weird that it's just so fucking bad. it's just a regurgitation of everything from the first movie that people loved, but then like was trying too hard. And it didn't feel right. It didn't feel natural. I don't even know if it felt like a cash grab, because like the movies came out pretty far apart. So let's see. Yeah, like 10 years apart. And I definitely think Boondock Saints is a movie that like did not need a sequel. It was fine as it was. So I'm not sure who asked for the second one. But it is not good. It does not hold up. There's a lot of homophobic jokes, quote jokes. There's a lot of use of like the R word and just some general political incorrectness across the board. So those parts weren't great. And then the special agent that they had in this one, played by Julie Benz, and I love her, so she plays Special Agent Eunice, and just kind of does the same thing that Willem Dafoe's character in the first one does. Like, she's him in this one. And kind of the reenacting moments just get more and more fucking ridiculous and just really painful to watch. It's like I'm embarrassed for the character. You know, like, and like everybody comes back, you know, even Rocco comes back in a form of like a dream or some bullshit. You know, Billy Connolly as Da, and just that whole storyline then too with him and why the priest was murdered and how it was connected to their father, and it was all like a setup from his old bestie or whatever. Just not great. I'm really, really, really not a fan of this movie. And even at the end, when we get the cameo of Willem Dafoe, he's there and he's meets Eunice and he's like, you know, there's a reason why I picked you and we got to keep him going and this. And I'm just like, even that couldn't save the movie. It just was not great. So I really did try to go in like not ready to poop all over the movie when I started watching it. I went in truly thinking, hoping that like maybe it wasn't as bad as I remembered. But it's just as bad as I remembered, if not worse. So I would, if you haven't seen it and you want to watch it, by all means, do so. Maybe you'll enjoy it. Great, happy for you, but I can't do it. If you do love this movie, let me know. Let me know what it is that you love so much about this movie. Maybe it's the things that I don't like about this movie, and that's always just kind of interesting, you know? It's, so to speak, you know, one person's trash is another person's treasure kind of thing. So, but, all right. I've also been watching a lot of found footage horror movies. It's one of my favorite like subgenres of horror. But For me, it's a hard one to love because, like, when it's good, it's good. But when it's not, it really just pisses me off. And I feel like I don't have very high standards for found footage movies. I'm just kind of like, I think generally when it comes to horror movies, I'm just in it for the kills and the murder and whatever wild twists there are. And, you know, it can be a slow burn. It can be kind of like a psychological thriller type, but it needs to have a big boom at the end. There needs to be something that made all of that worth it. Whether all that buildup and tension was great and it had me hooked the entire time, or if it wasn't that great, but now I'm just kind of curious, because that happens. I just get curious and I'm like, will it end up paying off? And there are times where it doesn't. And then I'm just mad at myself and the movie. Because I don't turn off a lot of stuff. I try to get through movies, even if they're just kind of like, they just haven't hooked me. Because again, I'm kind of hopeful that there's something at the end that will make it pay off. Where I'm like, yes, that was fucking amazing. So, also with found footage, I don't go in looking for award-winning performances, but they have to be believable enough. And sometimes they are, and sometimes they just aren't. Or there's a moment or two that just kind of takes me out of it, where everything else was like, all right, I'm in it. I can do this. I can follow this. And there might be something where I'm like, oh, that took me right out of it. So with all of that said, I got a decent sized list I want to try and hit up. I'll try and hit them up as quickly as I can. So, all right. So one movie that I watched recently was one of the found footages was The Possession of Michael King. Per IMDb, after poor advice from a psychic leads to the death of his wife, a man vows to disprove the existence of the paranormal by allowing himself to be possessed by demons. What I says about it is, a white dude sets out to test his whiteness by trying to prove that the demons he literally summons don't exist. His race really has nothing to do with it, but I didn't know how else to make him sound. Kind of interesting. It's not that interesting. This movie was okay. I didn't completely hate this movie, but there definitely were moments that kind of took me out of it. So he's got all these cameras set up to, again, try and, you know, disprove the existence of the paranormal. And as soon as he goes and does some weird shit with some witches, I wasn't really paying attention. Because let me add on to my expectations of found footage. I don't really care about, like, the first 20 minutes. I don't care how or why they're recording their lives. Let's get to the spooky shit. So his wife dies and whatever. He didn't even believe in that stuff, I think, when she was alive. But he goes to this couple and they do some sort of weird demon summoning sex ritual kind of thing. And shit starts getting weird real fast. And it does the classic, like, glitchy cameras when the spirit or demon is around. You can see him, the demon taking over Michael throughout time, you know, throughout the run of the movie, obviously. And yeah, it wasn't bad. There were some parts that were pretty spooky that I liked. There were parts where, like, there was a couple of parts where Michael is trying to, like, fight off the demon or resist the demon or whatever. And the way he kind of, like, screams, the way his body moves or something, the way he screams, there was just something about it that just kind of took me out of it. I don't know what it is. I can't pinpoint it. And all I could think was, like, because it happens at the same time, like, the camera gets all glitchy. So I didn't know if maybe it was the timing of the glitchiness itself with the demon roaring from Michael in a sense. But there was kind of little moments like that where I was just like, I did like the ending. I won't spoil the ending. I thought that was pretty decent. And there was like a creepy peeper moment with possessed Michael, and he has like a live-in caretaker for his young daughter that, I don't know, that didn't really seem necessary. It didn't show anything. It didn't show like if he, no indication on whether or not Demon Michael assaulted her or anything, but just being there and, yeah, kind of unnecessary. But, yeah, Possession of Michael King, not too bad. Also with found footage, it's the hard thing can, again, be just the patience needed for big booms and kind of hanging in there until all the wild, suspenseful, spooky shit starts to happen. Let's see. So with that said, this next movie that I watched, Exists, I thought did a pretty good job of still taking its time to kind of get to the spooky shit, but I enjoyed the spooky shit. So what IMDb says about Exists, a group of friends who venture into the remote Texas woods for a party weekend find themselves stalked by Bigfoot. What I says about this movie, I says, a found footage Bigfoot movie that I actually liked. Sorry, not sorry, Willow Creek. I did not care for that one. That is definitely one that I felt did not live up to any of the suspense, and the boom was not big enough. With Exists, quite the opposite. I thought it did a really good job kind of building that suspense. Again, I felt like it does take a while. But that's also why I'm not interested in like that first like 10, 20 minutes of found footage. But like I said, compared to Willow Creek, this was definitely better in my opinion. And it's, yeah, I won't get too spoilery with this one other than just, yeah, just kind of hang in there until they get to the cabin. All right. So this next one is kind of goes along more along the lines like with social media and stuff. So the movie's called Followed. What IMDb says is, to gain more subscribers, a controversial social media influencer stays at a cursed hotel to terrifying results. What I says about this movie, I says, one of my favorite sub-genres of the found footage subgenre is the cocky piece of shit YouTuber, vlogger, influencer, person type getting taken down several pegs by the ghosts and or demons that they're fucking with. So that's that's this movie in a nutshell. So yeah, this guy, Mikey, he has like a basically a YouTube page and he's dropped the mic. And yeah, he's kind of that shock vlogger or whatever and says and does controversial stuff and does some of the ghosty stuff and tries to like disprove shit. So there's like this super, super haunted, cursed hotel, which is clearly a reference to the Hotel Cecilia, Cecil. That's Cecilia. And clear, obvious references to Elisa Lam, whose body was found at Hotel Cecil's rooftop in a water tank back in 2013. So per IMDb trivia, it says that actual footage of her in the elevator is shown in this film. Her death was ruled an accidental drowning with bipolar disorder as a contributing factor. I didn't think they used the actual footage. They had someone playing a Megan Kim character, who is the reference to Elisa Lam, showing her kind of going in and out of the elevator and looking kind of freaked out. but I don't remember them being, either way, it's not super important. There's also a, there's also another reference to actual events. In the movie, there is a fictional serial killer that they call the Night Crawler. Clearly a reference to the Night Stalker, Richard Ramirez, who also lived in the Hotel Cecil in the 80s. But yeah, so this drop the mic vlogger guy, he decides to do, you know, like a one of those challenges, a 3-night challenge, staying in this like super haunted hotel and everything. And almost as soon as they get there, weird, spooky shit starts happening. And for the first few things, Mike just kind of brushes them off because he doesn't believe in any of like the paranormal and any of that bullshit. And he thinks it's just a fan fucking with him. And he's so touched. Meanwhile, his camera guy is kind of saying like staying here is pretty fucked up. He's pretty hesitant to want to do this. And then the third member of their crew, a girl, Danny, I think she does maybe sound. And then there's a fourth one who does all the editing, and she just kind of stays in the hotel room since they're recording all of this and trying to get it uploaded in like real time and whatnot. So she's got a lot of shit on her plate. But weird shit starts happening with Mike and Danny and, third guy. Sorry, third guy. Chris? Maybe? Yes, Christopher. Yeah, so weird shit starts happening to Danny, Christopher, and Mike. A couple of times they go in to check on their editor, Nick, and she's kind of looking worse for wear every time they check on her. She's crying hysterically. She's just overwhelmed with emotions, and things aren't right. So yeah, so this movie I thought was okay. It was fairly entertaining. The spooky bits were nice and spooky. And the acting was okay. Unfortunately, there were a couple of times where Christopher just didn't have enough of urgency or fear or something. There were a few times where it felt a little flat. But there were other times where like it seemed like dude was truly freaked out. So that's all right. Like I said, I kind of expect these types of moments with found footage. But I continued to watch it, and I did kind of like it. And I think at one point, because, you know, there's always that like old wise person that knows like all the things, and he's like a professor or whatever that they had interviewed earlier in the movie. And Mike contacts him a couple of times to be like, yo, so what's really going on with this fucking hotel? And at one point, Mike sees like a little kid and he like recognizes him. And he's just like, how do I know this kid? So he starts following him, this, you know, ghost child, and follows the ghost child up to like the fourth floor and goes to enter the room that the kid had gone into. And he opens it and it's actually like their hotel room, and it's got Christopher and Danny in it, who's already themselves going through some spooky shit. So like weird portal-y kind of stuff. But anyway, Mike is asking this professor type dude about like, you know, any of the deaths and, you know, small children. And there is like a, you know, there was like a crime that happened and kids were murdered and whatnot. And then a little later, after enough crazy shit had happened where the rest of his crew left, and they're just like, dude, you need to go too. And he's like, I can't. I need the subscribers, blah, blah, blah. He's heading down towards like the basement, and he's talking to the old professor dude. I think Wallace was his name. And I was pretty sure that professor dude was telling Mike that the kid that he was following was him. Mike was following the child, like child version of him. So then I was like, okay, so there's like a time portal or something here. And again, since I don't pay a whole hell of a lot of attention, I might have missed any kind of explanation to that. But it didn't really explore a lot explore that too much further. And eventually Mike succumbs to the hotel and becomes like a part of the hotel or a part of the hotel's internet or fucking some shit. But I thought it was entertaining enough. I enjoyed it. Again, the spooky bits were nice and spooky. I do enjoy seeing, like I said, just like a cocky piece of shit social media influencer, YouTuber type, just getting the shit scared out of them. So that's always fun to watch. So I enjoyed that one. Let's see, in terms of pacing to get to the spooky shit, it didn't take any more or less time than kind of your average found footage movie. All right, and next up, this will be the last one, I promise, is called The Tunnel. So per IMDb, an investigation into a government cover-up leads to a network of abandoned train tunnels deep beneath the heart of Sydney. As a journalist and her crew hunt for the story, it quickly becomes clear the story is hunting them. So what I says about this movie, I says, this is another favorite sub genre of found footage, the desperate journalist documentarian that keeps lying and pushing their crew to their deaths for that perfect story. So it's very similar to like the YouTuber type, the one that just keeps going, doing it for the likes, doing it for the credibility, the notoriety. Pretty standard, right? So this one I'm going to get spoilery with, but I enjoyed this one. I did a lot. This one did feel like it took a little longer to get to some of the spookier bits. I think they were just kind of painting the picture that this lead documentarian character, Natasha is kind of desperate to do this story and find out what the issue is about accessing these tunnels. There's like a lake down there that they could use for water access. And how I think like the project had started, but then abruptly stopped. So, and there was like another incident prior to like the movie starting that happened where she felt like she had to kind of like make up for that. So she was like trying extra, extra hard. I don't recall what that was. I just remember a couple of her crew members talking about it in the tunnels with her not present, but then her being like, I can hear everything because of the tunnels. Either way, she keeps pushing and she's like, yeah, we totally have access. Mike or whomever, I don't know, probably their producer, totally okayed it. It's all fine. It's all good. And then of course you find out after spooky shit happens that she did not have the okay from producer Mike or whoever to go down there. So no one knows they're there because they're like, well, maybe we can just wait it out until morning. Someone will come and get us once we haven't checked in. And it was like, nope, that's just not an option. So I thought I liked the spooky bits. All right. So when we finally kind of see the monster or whatever that they're going up against, and I don't think they ever really explain what the fuck it is. It's just that you get the sense that, you know, weird shit is happening down in the tunnels. And there's proof that people are living down there, but there's no people kind of thing. And, you know, so what could have driven, you know, where could those people have gone? Why did the government stop exploring the caves to access like this lake? And they find out that there's some fucking creepy ass monster that lurks in the shadow and like eats your face or something. Either way, when we finally see it and it's like in the lake and it's, yeah, like eating one of the crew members or like snapping their neck, that was really fucking spooky. I was pretty tense during all of that. So they did a really good job with that monster. I thought it was, I guess, like pretty realistic in terms of like maybe what you might expect or would want to see in some sort of like creepy shadow fucking monster that's going to eat your face. You know, it wasn't like, if you believe in ghosts and stuff like that, I feel like the look of this monster is within that realm of reason. You know, it's not some giant humanoid spider type or anything super duper science fiction-y, but something that does feel like it could be possible. This monster or whatever could exist somewhere in some dark, creepy tunnels with some hidden lake. So I did enjoy that. So I felt like all the spooky bits kind of building up to that reveal were solid, and I felt like the reveal paid off. You kind of already knew out of this crew of four who were going to die, because the movie itself is kind of done as a documentary itself, with the surviving crew members, the journalist and like one of the cameramen talking about the experience of doing the story, getting down there, and then all the wild, spooky, kooky, crazy shit happening. So you only see that they only ever like talk to the two, and there's a crew of four, so you're like, okay, they're not gonna make it out. Which is fine, because then at that point it becomes like, how? And I was good. I was good with the how. So I do recommend the tunnel as well, but that one I do feel like took a little longer getting up to the big boom, the scary bits, the reveal of this fucking shadow lake weird monster thing. I don't know what it was, but it was scary looking. I didn't like it. I didn't realize how tense I was until the scene ended and I felt my body relax. And I was like, oh my God, that was really scary. All right, I think that'll do it for me today. I think I've covered enough shows, well, one show and enough movies, clearly to fill a little mini bubble, a little more than little. But if you've seen any of these that I've talked about, let me know what you thought of them. Did you love them? Did you hate them? Am I wrong? Am I completely right? I am. But let me know what you thought. If you have any other suggestions, especially like found footage, let me know. You can send all of that to mystreamingbubble@gmail.com. And be sure to follow my podcast, because you can reach me there as well. So you can find this podcast, My Streaming Bubble, over there on Twitter, @StreamingBubble, no my in that. Facebook, Instagram, and Threads as My Streaming Bubble. And you can listen on a podcast player near you, obviously, because you're listening. And I thank you for that. Thank you. I appreciate it. I'd also appreciate it if you checked out my other podcast that I co-host with Aaron from It's a Fandom Thing podcast. And that one's called Twin It to Win It Podcast. And you can find us on Twitter @TwinItToWinPod. No second it in that. Facebook, Instagram, and Threads as Twin It to Win It Podcast. And you can listen to it on most podcast players. That one is a monthly podcast where we watch movies that we don't know how the other one feels about it, and we try and guess to test our twinningness. Now, we aren't actually twins, just for the record. But it's a lot of fun. And I have to say, when I edit our episodes, we're hilarious, basically. So you should listen, because I think you'll have a good time with it. All right. And that is it. So again, thank you all so much for listening, and keep streaming. Bye.